So we have been going over the, or studying the miracles of Jesus lately. And the next miracle that we're going to be talking about tonight is coming from Luke chapter 8, 22 through 25, or Mark 4, 35 through 41, or Matthew 8, 23 through 27, which is the calming of the Sea of Galilee. And before we get into that, Earl, would you mind leading us in prayer?
Our Father in heaven, we're grateful for the opportunity we have to be here midweek to take some time out in the middle of a busy week and slow down and put all the worldly concerns out of our mind and concentrate on a portion of your word and study it and try to glean from it the things that you want us to understand and know that would help us as we live here upon this earth and hopefully live lives that honor you. We pray that you would be with Zachary as he teaches the class tonight. Be with all of us and help us to benefit from the time that we spend here together tonight. In Jesus' name.
Thank you, Earl. So let's start just by reading the accounts here. So starting with the one in Matthew. Matthew chapter 8 and starting in verse 23. Yeah, if I could get a volunteer to go ahead and read that. Matthew 8, starting in verse 23 through 27. Russ, if you would, please.
Now when he got into a boat, his disciples followed him, and suddenly a great tempest arose on the sea, so that the boat was covered with the waves, but he was asleep. Then his disciples came to him and awoke him, saying, Lord, save us, we are perishing. But he said to them, Why are you fearful, O you of little faith? Then he arose and rebuked the winds and the sea, and there was a great calm. So the men marveled, saying, Who can this be, that even the winds and the sea obey him?
Okay. So this, as all three of these accounts end with, the question of, who is this that even the winds and the sea obey him? So that's one of the things we've been trying to focus on with our study of the miracles, is who is Jesus, and what do the miracles teach us about who he is? So let's look at the account in Mark chapter 4. Each of the accounts is very similar, but there are some small differences. Mark chapter 4, verse 35 through 41. I realized when I had Les read that the people on the Zoom call are not going to be able to hear anybody else reading, so maybe I should go ahead and read, in spite of the fact that I prefer to have other people read. All right, starting in verse 35 of Mark chapter 4. On that day, when evening had come, he said to them, Let's go across to the other side. And leaving the crowd, they took him with them in the boat, just as he was. And other boats were with him. And a great windstorm arose, and the waves were breaking into the boat, so that the boat was already filling. But he was in the stern, asleep on the cushion. And they woke him and said to him, Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing? And he awoke and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, Peace. Be still. And the wind ceased, and there was a great calm. He said to them, Why are you so afraid? Have you still no faith? And they were filled with great fear, and said to one another, Who then is this, that even the wind and the sea obey him? And the last account is from Luke chapter 8. Luke chapter 8, and starting in verse 22. One day he got into a boat with his disciples, and he said to them, Let us go across to the other side of the lake. So they set out, and as they sailed, he fell asleep. And a windstorm came down on the lake, and they were filling with water and were in danger. And they went and woke him, saying, Master, Master, we are perishing. And he awoke and rebuked the wind and the raging waves, and they ceased, and there was a calm. He said to them, "Where is your faith?" And they were afraid, and they marveled, saying to one another, "Who then is this, that he commands even winds and water, and they obey him?" So, do we, just as a little bit of a background on the situation, do we know where Jesus was coming from?
Just come out of Capernaum, heard this, and it appears he was on the western side of the Sea of Galilee.
Mm-hmm.
Because other accounts you can read on, they went to the opposite side, which is, it says is on the other side of the Galilee.
Yeah.
So he's traveling from the west side to the east side.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's the best guess that I've seen, is probably came from Capernaum. We don't actually know for certain because the different accounts place it at different points in Jesus' ministry. So, but that's the best guess I've come up with. So why was it they crossed the lake? Why did they get in the boat to cross the lake?
To go to the other side.
Oh no.
Why the chicken cross the road? Why the chicken cross the road, Kevin?
So the only thing that I saw that really stated a purpose was from Matthew 8, verse 18, which is a little bit earlier than the, if I remember right, was a little earlier than the actual reading. Oops. 18, verse 18. No wonder it didn't look right.
So it looks like they're trying to get themselves separated from the crowd then? Is that what
Yeah, so there was a crowd, and actually it was, I miswrote that down, I think. It might have been Mark that actually said this.
Matthew
8,
18 as well.
So yeah, that's, yeah. And there was mentioned, yeah, Mark chapter 4, and leaving the crowd, they took him into the boat. So, essentially, he was trying to get away from the crowd to some degree. Why would Jesus have fallen asleep in the boat?
He was tired.
He was tired? Why would he be tired?
Because he was a man as well as God in the flesh.
True.
We walk a lot.
The disciples didn't fall asleep. Were they not tired?
Should be.
I'm just trying to get you thinking about what might have been going on.
Probably deliberate. He may have done it deliberately, just to kind of set the stage for what was getting ready to happen.
Okay, that's an interesting consideration. But consider, okay, Ben Neal.
The disciples were in their element. They were fishermen.
True.
And this is what we do. And find it interesting, though, that they get out there and it's bad enough that it scared them.
That's a good point. I hadn't thought about the fact that.
They're going to pay attention.
Yeah, because the disciples were fishermen, that it's even more telling that they were so terrified of just how bad this storm was.
Water has a very common effect on you, too. I'm telling you that. That's
okay. Yeah. That's a good point. But also consider how busy Jesus is and how much people would come in and interrupt him sometimes, as well as, and just seeking him out, seeking healing, seeking teaching, all this kind of stuff. How much time does he even get to rest? And so, he is a man. And he's a man who has a lot of people influencing the amount of time he has to actually rest. And so, he's just taking advantage of the situation. Ken?
The point what occurred to me is, if the disciples' faith would have been what it should have been,
mm-hmm.
would there even have been a storm?
Okay. I never considered that either, of whether there would have been a storm if the disciples' faith had been as it should have. Were such storms common on the Sea of Galilee? Was it common to have storms on the Sea of Galilee?
I don't think plenty of water that size, yes.
Yeah. I haven't seen anything to say just how common, but I definitely, from what I've gathered, they're definitely not unusual.
One of the things with regard to this is the area around that can be considered rather arid at times. And you get the dry, hot winds coming in over that lake and creating a massive amount of evaporation from the lake.
Mm-hmm.
You have hot air rising because there's no moisture, there's no storm. Hot air rising, taking moisture off of that lake. You have a source for a storm that experienced it, not over a lake, but over a city.
Yes.
You have moist air coming in and hit concrete and asphalt, large city.
Yes, and that definitely does happen.
Prevailing south, southeastern breeze in San Antonio, the northwest side every afternoon, got thunderstorms.
Mm-hmm.
So you have the warm air in that area. The moisture was the limiting factor for storms, about the flood.
Yeah. So from what I studied, it was similar to that, but it's not quite that situation exactly. But just before we get into that, we've noted before that Luke tends to record small details and be very accurate about it. And you can see that throughout Luke, and especially in Acts. But what's intriguing to me is that in this account, Luke, where Matthew and Mark say that the storm arose on the sea, Luke specifically says that a windstorm came down on the lake. What does that imply to you? Is anybody familiar with what, or if nothing else, just from like pictures that you may have seen of the Sea of Galilee, what is the surrounding landscape like?
Mountainside.
Yes.
I said you had warm air rising off the lake, cooler air from the mountain.
Yeah, and that's what I read that happens. Typically, from what a little bit of research I did, the wind is typically coming from the west there. Sometimes it does come from the east, but we don't know. But especially saying it came down on the lake, it's possible that it came from the northwest because Mount Merom is there, and that's, from what I could tell, the highest point nearest to the lake, or to the Sea of Galilee. So maybe it came from there, but pretty much any direction it came from is going to be a pretty significant drop because the Sea of Galilee is about 700 feet, I think it was 700 feet below sea level. So it's got a long way to go down to get to it anyway. And so let me just read a little article that I found that talked about this. So such storms result from differences in temperatures between the seacoast and the mountains beyond. The Sea of Galilee lies 680 feet below sea level. It is bounded by hills, especially on the east side where they reach 2,000 feet high. These heights are a source of cool, dry air. In contrast, directly around the sea, the climate is semi-tropical with warm, moist air. The large difference in height between the surrounding land and the sea causes large temperature and pressure changes. This results in strong winds dropping to the sea, funneling through the hills. The Sea of Galilee is small, and these winds may descend directly into the center of the lake with violent results. When the contrasting air masses meet, a storm can arise quickly and without warning. Small boats caught out on the sea are in immediate danger. The Sea of Galilee is relatively shallow, just 200 feet at its greatest depth. A shallow lake is whipped up by wind more rapidly than deep water, where energy is more readily absorbed. Lake Erie in the United States provides somewhat similar to the Sea of Galilee. Erie is more than 100 times larger, but it has the same 200 feet maximum depth, the shallowest of the Great Lakes. Lake Erie is especially well known as the stormy, moody member of the Great Lakes system. It is easily stirred up by west winds to produce violent waves, and even the largest fishing boats are put at risk. So that's just a little bit of background on what might have been the situation that caused such a storm to blow up so suddenly and them being taken so by surprise by it. So, and that was from, just for reference, Dr. Donald B. DeYoung of the Creation Research Society wrote that. So, as the boat began to fill with water from the waves, and their danger was increasing, how did the disciples react?
Zach, mm-hmm. before we leave the possible causes of the storm,
mm-hmm.
could we also consider that possibly the storm was, it was providential, that it was, the storm was called, created, caused by the Lord to
yes.
provide this moment of teaching? I mean, I don't know yeah. that it was, but it,
yes,
I think that is a possibility.
Yes, I would say it certainly is a possibility that it was providential, but I also would not necessarily say that it's miraculous.
No,
the storm came up anyway.
It was probably caused by physical
yeah,
circumstances.
But God may have set it in motion with that intention, yes.
Possibly.
That is a possibility.
Yeah.
After all, it made it into the Bible, so there was a significance to it. So I don't think we can deny that that is a possibility. So, any other comments anybody like to make before we move on? All right. So, what was the disciples' reaction to this storm and the increasing danger from it?
Fear and panic.
I know what mine would be. I'd want to get out of
there. Oh, yeah. I definitely want to get out of there, mm-hmm. for sure.
It's scary when you're on a lake and the storm comes up at night, especially at night.
Yes, and this was, and they had left in the evening. I forgot to bring that out, but yes, Mark says that on that day, when evening had come, they ain't let us go across the lake. So yes, it was at night. And the storm comes up, they're definitely in danger because, as Neil pointed out, them being fishermen, for them to be this terrified, it has to be a very bad storm because they're used to being out on this very lake a lot and at night too. From what I recall, fishing it on the Sea of Galilee is typically done at night. So. As Elaine said, they're scared, they're terrified, and they're panicking. By contrast, when they manage to wake up Jesus, what is his reaction? How does he handle the situation? Yeah, but also, by contrast to them, how does he seem to be, or what is his emotional state by comparison? Yeah, very calm. He seems calm and composed, and so when he wakes up, he merely rebukes the tempest. And it stops. So, how is that miracle described when Jesus calms the storm. How is it described? Or describe it yourself in your own words if you want. Is there anything particularly odd that strikes you in the way that the result is described, contrary to what you might expect?
Well, it was instant.
Yes. It was instant. And when you think about it, you've got all this wind, you've got all these waves that are in the sea, all the churning water, and it immediately stops. It's not that the wind stopped and the sea settled down. It stopped.
The New American Standard says that it became perfectly calm.
Yes. Good point. So it's not that, and it's not like the energy had time to just dissipate. It just instantaneously stopped.
Normal storms subside.
Yes.
Gradually over time, they reach their peak, mm-hmm. and then they start to wane, but their strength is still there for a time, and they gradually calms down. This was
exactly, and even if he miraculously just removed the storm itself, you would still expect the lake to take time to settle down. And it didn't do that either. It just immediately stopped. So this is very unique in how this happened. So what is unique about this miracle, other than what we just brought out, compared to others in the Bible? Okay. Were there no other instances of weather being changed?
I mean,
that's one instance, yes. But how was that one described when it came about? When Elijah prayed that the rain would cease. And it ceased for 3.5, or there was a drought for 3.5 years. But when the rain came back, how is that described?
It's a speck and grew gradually.
Mm-hmm.
There's a cloud that says the size of a man's hand.
Yeah.
Elijah didn't command it to happen.
That's also true. Elijah didn't command it, he requested it of God.
It was a work of God. This
and
was work of Christ.
As was pointed out, it started off small, but even more interesting to me is when he sent the servant to look to see if the rain cloud was coming, was it there?
Not yet.
How many times did he send him? Do you remember?
Seven.
Yeah, 7 times before it actually happened. So there's another instance in 1 Kings, or let's see, nope, sorry, that was, 1 Kings 18 was the one with Elijah. 1 Samuel 12, 16 through 18, if you want to look at that real quick, is another instance of miraculous weather in the Bible. 1 Samuel 12, 16 through 18. So after, this is when Samuel's basically giving his farewell address to Israel after appointing Saul as being a king. And appointing Saul as being king when they asked for a king against God's plan. So starting verse 16, "Now therefore stand still and see this great thing the Lord will do before your eyes. Is it not wheat harvest today? I will call upon the Lord that he may send thunder and rain, and you shall know and see that your wickedness is great, which you have done in the sight of the Lord, in asking for yourselves a king. So Samuel called upon the Lord, and the Lord sent thunder and rain that day. And all the people greatly feared the Lord and Samuel. So again, what are some of the differences in how this occurred? Actually, first let's say, why is this one miraculous? If I remember right, what's his name? Who came and did the series on the Bible lands for us, Barry Britnell. I think he might have been the one who brought this up. What is unique about the timing?
He had wet season, dry season.
Yes.
And harvest was dry season.
Yes, harvest is the dry season in Israel. And if I recall correctly, there is almost, and in fact, there practically is never rain during that season. And in this case, there is rain. A thunderstorm comes up. But what is the difference between how this miracle occurred compared to how Jesus handled the miracle in the account we're studying now?
One is starting the storm, and one's stopping the storm.
Okay, it's not really the type of point I was looking for, but it's true.
He called on the Lord to do something.
Yes. It wasn't Samuel that did it. Samuel called on the Lord to do it. And again, it did not happen instantly. It just says that day there came thunder and rain. So it was quick, but it was not instantaneous. And probably the most similar in the way that the miracle happened would be in Jonah chapter 1 and verse 15, which most of us are probably quite familiar with. And because that one, when Jonah was thrown into the sea became calm. And it stopped its raging. But that one has the difference of it wasn't people. And it wasn't really so much a prophet saying or asking God to stop the waves and stop the storm. But Jonah, being in trouble, told them that it is my fault. And if you throw me into the sea, God will spare you, basically. And that is how it happened. But still, it's a very different type of situation as far as the people involved and there that scenario, but the storm did, as far as I can tell, was pretty abrupt and calming in that case too. But I don't know how immediately it was.
I was just thinking how the point's been made many times, of course, that God in the original in Genesis spoke the universe into existence mm-hmm. in 6 days. And so if God has that kind of power, which he does, mm-hmm. then for him to speak or rebuke the wind is really nothing to God. But he spoke, my point is that he spoke and the wind obeyed him, and that's what the apostles were marveling at, is who is this man whom even the winds and the waves obey him?
True. Yeah. So Jesus, in this case, is showing his deity by not asking God to do it, not making a request and it happening over time. He merely rebukes the very elements of nature, and they stop what they're doing. That's an interesting point, yes. Jonah was asleep too. Yeah, and that is one of the things that I do also find interesting about this is just how terrible the storm apparently was, and Jesus was sleeping through it. While being out on the sea, He was still sleeping through it.
It shows Jesus' humanity too.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
He was in the flesh.
Yeah. Yeah, and that he was sleeping.
He was sleeping and he was.
And then he wakes up and immediately, from doing a very human act of sleeping, wakes up and immediately does a very godlike act of calming the sea.
Maybe when you've created it, you've got power over it, mm-hmm. controls, and you can be at ease. The
yeah.
fishermen were totally out of control. They had no power over it, so naturally they're going to be panicking.
Yeah. But, so when Jesus, after he calms the sea, he turns to the disciples and asks them why they still have no faith. Or why are you afraid, oh, you of little faith? Whereas Luke says, where is your faith? Is that not an interesting question to ask when they came to him for help? They were in trouble and they came to Jesus for help. But Jesus tells them they have no faith.
With him there, they weren't in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't have faith in his, just his very presence being a savior. He needed things, they expect him to have to do something. And just
yeah.
being there, nothing was going to happen because he has control of everything. And
yeah.
the only reason he died is because he allowed himself to be killed.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't going to happen here. That wasn't the plan. It wasn't going to happen. Don't have to even worry about it.
Yeah.
But yet, they were worried.
They were, yes. So, if they had thought it through, because they did believe that Jesus was the Messiah, then why would they expect God to allow the Messiah to perish in a storm before his mission was done? As well as just believing in Jesus with the power that he'd already shown. But this is the first time he shows such, really a very dramatic example of his power over nature. So after this, the sea was calmed. But then it says the disciples are afraid. Why are they afraid now?
It's a different fear.
Mm-hmm.
And he also said, it sounds like the person is not afraid. They fear God, fear the Lord. Verse 16 of John.
The first
all power they didn't understand.
Yes. And Jesus, in the way that he does this miracle, is almost casual about it. And just rebuking the wind and in the waves. And so it's a casual display of unheard of power. Because nobody has ever done something like this before. And they've never heard of anybody doing something like this before. They've never seen it. And who wouldn't fear a person with that kind of power after you just witness them do that?
You wonder too if some of these were actually boat owners
mm-hmm.
that weren't as much of a disciple. They may have just not been a bit higher and didn't understand as much as what the nature of Christ was. And even those had an eyes on
mm-hmm.
in a big way. His authority over the things seen and the things unseen. The seen of the effects of the wind and the waves. The unseen is the energy that causes that stuff to move in the first place. And with the spoken word, the energy, the impulse, the forces, matter itself, all all being totally intimate.
Yes.
It's, so they're, they were used to it. They've seen it before, they've experienced it before. They never experienced it, flip the switch. It didn't happen, that didn't happen, that did.
Yeah. So, as I brought out in the beginning of this, every one of these accounts ends with, who then is this? Who can command even the winds and the water and they obey? So who is it? What does this say about Jesus?
He was God.
Yes. He was very evidently God in the flesh. And he was the one, as John begins his gospel pointing out, the one through whom and by whom all things were made.
Zach?
Yes.
This is a, like you said, just a tremendous display of his power. But compared to the creation account that we read about in Genesis, it is a small demonstration of his power.
True. Yes, compared to the creation, it is a very, very small thing to calm a storm. Neil?
Slide aside, this is, okay, the winds and the waves stopped. Now they're going after boat shore. So they're probably going to sail at that point.
Good point. There might be enough relief that they might not care at that point, though.
Start, you know, okay, we need to zipper to get us to shore. Okay, there goes. But turn it off, turn it off.
So I had a something of a class activity that I was going to bring out, and I don't really have time for it. It's sad. So I wanted to look at, if you take out your hymnals and look at song number 689. The Master of the Tempest is Raging, yes. Or 689. Who actually has a short talk tonight? Okay.
You said 689?
Yeah, 689. It's such a perfect one to fit this because there's no question that this song was taken from this account. And it just, it does a good job of talking about who Jesus is, as well as describing the situation, expounding upon the disciples' emotional situation in that, or their emotional state as they come to Jesus and pleading for him to do something. So let's just take a look at the lyrics real quick, and if nobody has the, song lady, maybe I'll lead the song as an invitation song if you want me to. Okay. So let's just read the lyrics real quick here. Master, the tempest is raging. The billows are tossing high. The sky is overshadowed with blackness. No shelter nor help is nigh. Carest thou not that we perish? How canst thou lie asleep when each moment so madly is threatening a grave in the angry deep? Master, with anguish of spirit, I bow in my grief today. The depths of my sad heart are troubled. Awaken and save, I pray. Torrents of sin and of anguish sweep o'er my sinking soul. And I perish, dear Master. Oh, hasten and take control. And then the chorus, the winds and the waves shall obey thy will. Peace be still. Whether the wrath of the storm-tossed sea or demons or men, or whatever it be. No waters can swallow the ship where lies the master of ocean and earth and skies. They all shall sweetly obey thy will. Peace be still. Peace be still. They all shall sweetly obey thy will. Peace, peace be still. Master, the terror is over. The elements sweetly rest. Earth, sun, and the calm lake is mirrored, and heaven's within my breast. Linger, O blessed Redeemer, leave me alone no more. And with joy I shall make the blessed harbor and rest on the blissful shore. So it's not just using this passage directly, but it's also expounding on that from our peril in our sins, and when we realize the state that we're in and the hopelessness of it, then we can still bring that to Jesus. So how would you like, if you were to try and convey this in the music, or with the music that's already written, but with what we can, while using the same tune, what we can adapt with that, how would you convey the emotions of especially those first two verses for those who are like music? Would you sing it sedately?
You sing it loudly if you're scared.
Loudly, yes. Because if you're panicking, you don't tend to be quiet about it.
There's a lot of fervor behind it, a lot of pleading.
Yes, there's fervor, there's pleading. I almost also think
the music itself, you could almost have it be in a minor key where it's...
Yes. I almost was like, I'd be interested to know what that would actually sound like if you shifted it to minor key, but I didn't have a chance to try and figure that one out. But especially because of the panic, when somebody's panicked, how do they normally talk? Other than loudly, we already brought that one up.
They talk fast.
Yes, they talk fast. They're almost stumbling over their words. So I would think to convey that, you'd want to sing at a little bit louder than normal, maybe, but also very, very fast, and possibly even almost uncomfortably fast for those first two verses, to try and just, so you can try and feel that state of emotion, or try and sympathize with it. And then the chorus, I'm still trying to figure out, like, what would be the best way to do the first part of the chorus? What are your thoughts? Because by the end of it, you've got that really, in the middle of the chorus, you've got that very powerful and rising climax. And as it's, I'm saying, the master of ocean and earth and skies, the music is also lifting up very high. They've got dynamics written in to say, you should be singing this very loud. So it's basically, by the time you hit that climax, you should be proclaiming this to the skies of who Jesus is.
Could almost put a full measure rest, beginning of the chorus, just pause.
Okay. See, what I'm planning to do is when I actually lead this song, I'm gonna try and incorporate it. See if we actually do a good job of it. But yeah, and so we start off the chorus at a more, probably more moderate volume. And then you get really quiet with the peace be still. And then it starts off from that quiet point and just builds to a very, very loud crescendo. And then after that crescendo, the master of the ocean and earth and skies, then I just see it turning from being that powerful and proclaiming type of tone to being a much more, the musical term is legato, just smooth and flowing and peaceful. they all shall sweetly obey thy will. And I would also say the third verse probably ought to be that way as well. Just a much more relaxed approach to it, because the terror is over. The elements are at rest. So, we have gone over time. And I apologize for that, but I wanted to at least talk about that a little bit. And we'll use that song as our invitation song here shortly. Thank you for the comments and the kind attention.